It's time to get your questions asked and answered by Walter Assey, president of Renovco, who joins me, Joanne Brackus. We're here taking your questions. 514-790-0800 is the phone number, and that is also the text line. Remember that if you do send us a text, please include your name so we know who we are talking to. I'm speaking to Walter. How are you, Walter?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, is your mic on, Walter? There you go.
I'm doing great.
Take
two.
Oh, you're good. You're good. How is your week?
My week was fabulous.
You had an anniversary. You guys went off to the Eastern Townships to my favorite hotel.
Yeah, it was beautiful, actually.
Yeah, we're this isn't a paid promotion for Javi Manor, but if you're ever in the area.
Yeah, the Eastern Townships from Manuwarovi is really nice.
Gorgeous. We've got a call coming in, but before we get to that, we're hearing about this Hurricane Helene. Every time we hear about a hurricane, every time we hear about a tropical storm, we got to start talking about preparedness. We don't know yet what impact it will have here in Montreal. I want to talk about, first of all, anytime we hear this and people have basements, what should we be checking?
We should start praying.
Praying?
Sending some positive vibes. No, not. I don't think this is going to be as serious as Debbie, for sure.
Mm.
You know, a lot of people have been very proactive. I have to say, we've seen it. People are starting installing backwater valves, backup sump pumps, sloping their landscaping, gutter extensions. So it's, I think, the first time in a long time I see how involved people are. Because, you know, there's probably the neighbor effect. A lot of neighborhoods get flooded.
Mm-hmm.
So one guy starts something and then everybody is following through.
Yeah, yeah.
And that actually is working out well. So
so the preparedness has kicked in.
I've seen it. I mean, I'm seeing a lot more torque towards preparedness than I've ever seen. And I've been in other catastrophes and disasters.
Okay,
before.
Okay. Let's turn things over to Donna. Donna has a question about her vinyl basement of flooring. Donna, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
All right, take it away.
I have a question. My floating floor that I had was 20 years old, and of course it was when they first came out. It was no good, of course, once it got flooded. I went to a flooring store, and I'm interested in getting the vinyl flooring, but the flexible one, not the rigid one. They told me the rigid one, yes, it's waterproof. You can pick it up and dry it, but when you go to click it back together, some of those little areas break off. What is your opinion on the flexible floating floor, the vinyl one?
The flexible one is actually good, but like in anything, you have different grades, including the rigid ones. So the flooring supplier is partially right. There are some grades that the lip or the tongue and groove area is not well made, so it does break and chip. But that's why there's different qualities, right? So if you get the higher quality, you can click it and unclick it, click it up to 7 times.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. But again, so it's really going to depend on the quality of the flooring you're going to get. The flexible does not have that as much because it does not have that tongue and groove happening. It's just you just line them up one next to the other. So it is also good. It just doesn't have maybe the same look. So cosmetically, you're going to get more a plasticky look rather than an engineered wood look or a, you know, wood look per se. So that's kind of sacrifice you have to do. So,
and with the flexible one, they say you don't have to put an underpad, but you can put it right on the concrete. Wouldn't that make it cold?
Well, that is also true for the rigid ones. The rigid one does not require an underpad. A membrane is totally, when it comes to the vinyl, a membrane, because a lot of these rigid ones, they come with their own backing, whether it's cork or rubber. Same applies to the vinyl. Now, the other, the underpad is purely optional in this case. It is a good idea if you have a cold slab. Where it doesn't help you much is if you have a flood, it has to come out, right?
Uh-huh.
But I mean, to be quite frank, the floating vinyl have to come out as well.
Uh-huh.
So it becomes really a question of how old your slab is, how cold your slab is, do you have a geotextile under your slab? You know, do you use your basement often? Is it just a service area? So you have to check all these boxes before you make a decision.
For the flexible one, if they say you don't need an under padding, could I still put one? Would it make it any better?
The only thing I want to caution you from would be the evenness of the slab. So when it comes to the floating floor, it tends to be a lot more forgiving. Whatever you had installed 20 years ago tend to be a lot more forgiving. It have a give. It's made to have to have a bounce to it. Not so much the vinyl floor. So that you might have issues with. What you want to really focus on is how even your slab is before you install it.
Well, I have a company coming in to fix some of the cracks that appear now in the floor, and there's some areas that are heaving. So they say it has to be grinded down and self-leveling cement, and then it would be good. Is that true?
That is true. So self-leveling cement will work to up about an inch max.
Okay.
So if you have 3-4 inches,
I don't have that.
But yeah, so up to an inch, that's the way you want to go. And you put it in the areas. I mean, it's the beautiful thing with self-leveling cement, it does its job and you let it roll, right? So yeah, that's pretty much the right way to go for sure.
Should I paint the floor before I do anything after all that or no?
It's not important at all.
Okay. Okay, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much, Donna. 514-790-0800. That is the number to reach us at for your questions concerning your home improvement needs. The same thing for your text, 514-790-0800. In terms of the flooring, though, that was a question we got last week that we didn't have the chance to get to. What is the most, and I know this is a big one, in terms of, okay, the basement was ruined, the damage was done, you have to replace it, the best one and the most economical one? Do those two things go together even?
They don't. Because, I mean, the most economical will be the vinyl lats because it's waterproof and you can reuse it. Is it the best one? No. I mean, the best really, if you want to forget about the word flooring, is you do a heated floor and then you install a porcelain ceramic on the concrete, and then you can forget about it forever. You don't have to ever rip
really?
It out. It doesn't matter what type of damage you have.
So wait, but, so you do a heated floor?
I mean, you do the heated floor for comfort.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you have to. Just because ceramic, most people will tell you, well, porcelain is cold. You're right, it's cold. You can make it warmer. You can install heated wires and it will be nice and warm. You could put it right on concrete and just put area rugs and carpets in order to have warm, cozy areas in the basement.
How much are we talking? I hear porcelain and I hear heated floors.
I mean, porcelain, I can also go with ceramic. I say the word porcelain because I'm used to it. But it's the installation more than the prices of the.
It's not the materials; it really is the work.
I mean, the materials is you want to get a good quality. But you're talking anywhere with a heated floor about $20-$25 a square foot.
Okay.
With the heated floor. Without the heated floor, you're probably talking anywhere between $10 to $14 a square foot.
Is there any way, can you ballpark the average basement price if you did the whole thing? I mean, and also, are you allowed to just say to your insurance company, like, in this rebuild, this is what I would like to put?
When it comes to a rebuild with insurance companies, provided you're fully covered. If you're not fully covered, they don't care what you put. You could put cardboard on your floor, they're going to cash you out. But if you are fully covered, as long as what you're going with is not inferior to what you had, you're allowed to do whatever you want.
Okay.
So, for example, if you had floating, you want to go with marble, you want to go with porcelain, you want to go with engineered, it doesn't really matter for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you start cutting so much out of the job that if they come and do an inspection, they might cut it off from your bill.
Really?
In certain cases.
Are they coming now post-flood to check?
They're not coming right now. Well, not that I know of, because of how busy they are.
Right.
It also depends on your policy. There are certain policies that you can buy where the insurance will cash you out and you don't have to do the repair.
Really?
Yeah, but you have to add additional for that. So it's like the higher end premiums.
But then they continue to cover you even though you don't do the repair?
Well, they don't care if you do it or not. They just write you a check. So they say, for example, your damages are $20,000. They write you a check for $20,000 and give it to you. And then you can decide what to do with it.
But you must be paying a lot every month for that.
Well, I mean, it's usually the higher end premiums that will offer that particular thing.
All right. 514-790-0800. The calls are coming in. Your questions for Walter. You can get us on the text line as well. Send us your name if you want to have a question for Walter Assey, again, president of Renovco. We are answering all of your home improvement questions and your concerns. 514-790-0800, to speak with Walter Assey, president of Renovco. I'm Joanne Vrakas, reminding you that the text line is also open. Send in your name when you send us your questions. We have Ken on the line. Ken has been waiting patiently with a question about water in his basement. Ken, can you hear us?
Yes.
Take it away.
It's not Ken, it's Tony, but anyway.
Sorry. Jimmy put Ken in there. Hi, Tony. Sorry.
Yeah.
Take it away, Tony.
The disaster is the water infiltration in the basement. And I've tried everything, but I had someone come in telling me that the whole basement has to be ripped out from the floors down to the cement, all the 2x4s, everything out. We had a lot of water that came in. And I tried to open windows. I tried to do different things. And I want to know from your experts whether or not if we used intense heat drying, like these Gibrock heaters, they put them in the basement. I did this once before where we put these, portable Gibrock heaters to dry the Gibrock. I was wondering if that could work, because I don't feel like spending $200,000. The insurance will not cover that. So, like, is there another way of doing this? Does your expert know a different way? Can it be dried? That's what I want to figure out.
Walter, it sounds like a gut job for Tony.
Tony, many questions have to be asked before I answer this. One of them is, how much water did you get in your basement? Number one.
I would say significant water came through.
How many inches?
It was not so much the inches, Walter. It was probably... It was water that came in and went below the floors, because we have wood floors in the basement that were lifted up off the floor. You know,
where did the water come in from?
It came in through the chimney area because of a chimney fire, etc. The fire department came in and poured tons and tons of water in to kill the fire.
Okay. So your wood floor is build on a subfloor, right? So you have like what, 2x4s and black paper?
We put it, I actually built the home, so it's black tar paper, 2x4s. They were, you know, they were put in when the cement was curing. They were bolted in, so the 2x4s are down. Then the subfloor was put in. Then the slats were put down, oak slats. So I'm like devastated, truly.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, Tony, we're so sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
So, Tony, the key word here that you used is black paper. When you have water on black paper, it does not dry. Black paper creates mold very, very quickly. That's why we don't use it anymore in basements. Because
okay.
It started off being a good idea at the time. Some genius said, okay, let's put the black paper on the floor. And it's great to keep the humidity that's coming out from the slab. But once you have water coming on it from top, then it becomes your worst enemy. So in a case like this, there's nothing and absolutely nothing you could do. And with the floors, let's start with the floors. And it's very simple way of thinking. You mentioned heaters. Heaters will work on anything that have no cavities. Once you are in a cavity that you can get to every, or you don't have some void in it in order for you to dry it up, then you run into problems. Your black paper is right on the concrete. You have the 2x4 that's tap conned on it. So there's, you know, the humidity is sandwiched in there. And there's no way any heater or fan, the worst thing you could use is a fan on it, mind you, because now it have mold, to be able to dry it. So the flooring, the subflooring, all the way to the concrete have to go. Now, if you didn't have any surface accumulation, so that means that the water was kind of restricted to the subfloor itself, then what you do is you remove the baseboards, if you act quickly, that is. You cut the drywall below the baseboard level so you don't create a lot of damage above it and you have to paint after. You disinfect the area. So now you rip out the floors, you rip up part of the drywall. you don't necessarily need to take out all the drywall, all the 2x4s, like everybody was saying, unless, of course, we had, you know, a significant accumulation. And, for example, the insulation in the walls are wet. Insulation in walls, especially as fiberglass, does not dry. If you have urethane, it's another story. So that's another question you have to ask yourself. But by the sound of it, your floor is 100% a total write-off. The walls, if there was no accumulation, you can probably save.
So the floors themselves, if you cut the gibrock around the perimeter of the flooring and created some type of venting there, it still would not correct the situation because the black tar paper is down. And
it's that is correct. Okay. And my advice to you, Tony, is very simple. If you don't have the budget to rebuild, you should have at least, you should do the demolition decontamination right and you should stop. Because that is a situation where it will get worse with time. Mm. The mold is going to spread. It's going to start creeping up the walls. And then you're going to have to deal with a bigger, more significant problem. So you're better off demolishing.
Yeah. It's just scaring me, everything you're saying. It's like, yeah.
I don't think he's trying to scare you. It's like a step-by-step thing.
No, I know he's not. He's trying to help me, but like I didn't think it was catastrophic, but it is, obviously.
Well, I mean, look, there's many websites, like Health Canada talks about certain things, the Canadian Housing and Mortgage Association website. You have also the IICRC website, which is the authority on fire and flood. It all explains you what I've been mentioning to you, so you'll feel a bit more informed and not get your source from one area.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know? Walter, I might be calling you this week because I can't even speak right now.
I get it,
Tony. We're so sorry you're feeling overwhelmed.
Sorry for your loss.
Yeah,
I'm an adult. I'm gonna deal with it like as intellectually as possible. But mm-hmm. you know, it's like nobody was expecting this type of disaster. You know,
mm-hmm. Tony. Anyway, listen, we
and
are.
By the way, you guys are great. I listen to you guys, and you know, I'm not an expert or anything, but I love listening to the the little tips that I get from Walter and different people that are on the show. So it's amazing. Thanks a lot for helping us.
Tony, you don't need to be making us feel better. We want to make you feel better. Listen, I reach out to Walter this week. And again, you know, there are different sites. He said it's step by step, and really take it step by step because it is overwhelming. Thank you for calling and sharing your story with us.
Thank you.
All right. It's 929 514-790-0800. That is the phone number for the calls. For your questions, for Walter Assey, president of Renovco, and of course for the text line. 514-790-0800. Walter Assey, president of Renovco, is taking your renovation, your home improvement questions. That is our phone number. That is our text line. Let's get to our next caller. We have Mike, who is on the line. Mike has a problem with water from the shower, I believe. Mike, can you hear us?
Good morning, yes.
Take it away.
Basically, on my second floor bathroom, I have a standalone tub and a standalone shower. And when we fill up the tub and then we drain it, there is water that comes up through the standalone shower. And it causes a smell, a bad smell as well. So we don't really understand what's going on there.
Okay, so one of two things. Either you have a partial blockage somewhere, or the plumbing drainage was improperly installed. It could be also a P-trap issue. So something was not installed with a P-trap. What you need to do, best case scenario, is you get a plumber to pass a camera through the drains just to see what's going on. You're better off getting a camera that can also, it's a fish with a camera, so you can unplug any blockage at the same time, so that way you don't get charged twice for a job.
Okay.
But that's probably what's going on.
Okay. See, because I know that there's a drain pipe on the, let's say, the south side of the house that takes care of the tub and the shower, and there's another drain, let's say, on the west side of the house that takes care of the toilet.
Correct.
And What I don't understand is sometimes it looks like debris is coming up from the shower, like looks like decomposed toilet paper.
It's, oh, boy.
Sorry for anybody having breakfast. And so we don't understand how that could be connected.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's probably some, like I told you, it's probably due to a partial blockage at the beginning. And then, you know, something backing up like a debris of that nature is an indication of a partial blockage. Now, was something crisscrossed when it was installed? That I can't tell you.
But it could be an installation issue as well.
It could be an installation issue. It could be a partial blockage issue. That's why I say start with a camera and then, you know.
You got to get in there.
Don't go with a plumber that don't have cameras, because I know some of them don't have cameras, which I find very weird. And don't go with a guessing game, because this could be a multiple reasons type of a problem. So the camera will kind of put them all to rest, and you will know exactly what needs to be done. A lot of it can be done from the bottom. So if you have a ceiling below it, you just open it up and, you know, and do all the corrective measures instead of ripping out
because,
the showers and the bathtub. And
because I'm pretty sure the toilet paper should not be coming up from the shower.
No.
We can all agree on that, Mike.
We can all agree on that for sure.
All right. Thank you for your call.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, we have, who's been waiting long here? Oh, we've got Brenda. Brenda's on the line. She's got flooding with her epoxy floors. Brenda, can you hear us?
Hi, yes. Hi. Thanks for listening to my call.
Yes, take
Love
it away.
Your show.
Thanks.
I actually called in just after the flood, and I'm living a nightmare.
Oh, boy.
But I ended up getting a great contractor who is educating me on how to do things right, make a smart basement. And I was listening to Tony, who just called in. I thought he sounded just like me.
Oh, boy, yeah.
I had to gut my whole basement, and I found out about a product called TechSill that you put under your sill plate when you're rebuilding to frame that helps the water flow. Because I'm going to be putting an epoxy floor in, which I wanted to ask about. And I'm at the stage that I've got nothing in my basement except I have my exterior walls framed with TechSill. And I was going to ask Walter if you ever heard about it.
I have.
Because this sounds like a product anyone rebuilding after a flood that had to gut their walls and subfloors like I did should be looking into this, because it sounds like an inexpensive fix to allow airflow for the next flood that we'll probably be getting. And I'm calling in because I heard about the big water main break in Point Claire last night, and I live in Point Claire. And I thought, oh, my God, this is all I need, you know, more water.
Mm.
It's good. Mother Nature is going to keep after us now, so we have to build a smart basement. So I'm trying to make it dry, and I thought this product is, I should tell everybody about it. Tony, if he's listening, if he's going to gut his basement, which he should, put TechSill in.
Okay. All right. So you've heard of this, and you want a question about the epoxy, right?
Well, I'm just asking Walter, is that something he uses, or the renovators and contractors out there, I don't know, tar paper, the old days, or putting some kind of a sill cloth underneath the sill plates, those days are over. I mean, we have to think about airflow.
Mm. Well, yeah, that's correct. When it comes to 2x4 divisions specifically, that will address that issue, so you don't have to cut your 2x4s per se. So instead of putting the 2x4 on right-on concrete with the styrofoam rolls that we used to use, you could use the TechSill to kind of put the 2x4 on legs and allow an airflow so you can adequately dry underneath without having to rip out the 2x4s in case of a sewer backup or major flooding.
And I even looked at this, so you can even retrofit it in if you have an existing wall, if you don't have to take the whole wall down. I thought, this is like a great invention.
Hmm.
And I was even looking up, too, that Yannick, your predecessor, had okayed this product. Or, you know, he said, wow, what a great idea. So I'm thinking, I want to tell everybody who's going to start rebuilding if they can't afford now, wait a few months or next year. It's such a great product to put in because we have to think about getting rid of the water.
Okay, well, thank you for that call, Brenda, and good luck with that. And if it works for you, it works for you. We're going to take a call now from Steve. Steve has a question about efficiency of electric heated floors. Oh, yeah, because we were talking about the heated floors before. Steve, take it away.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Walter, we're going to be putting down a porcelain floor on a concrete slab with a DITRA membrane, and I just want to discuss with you the efficiency of an electric heated floor. I'm kind of thinking that unless the floor has a break of a minimum of 2 inches of the rigid styrofoam between the slab and the DITRA, that the electric floor won't be efficient. We all know that heat rises, but heat also goes from hot to cold, which is the ground.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to determine, how inefficient the floor might be without the styrofoam, which is really best placed below the slab. And if you might have any idea as to what the wattage per square foot of an electrically heated floor with a DITRA membrane would be with and without a minimum two inch or even better 4 inch styrofoam break between the slab and the and the floor.
Okay, so do you have styrofoam underneath your slab?
Or no,
you
do no, not? We don't at okay. this point. I know okay. that's going to be, between that and the DITRA, it adds an awful lot to the cost of the project.
It does. Now, a couple of things. Is it going to be efficient? It's going to be a lot more efficient than just the concrete slab. And, especially if you have the older slab with no styrofoam or no geotextile underneath, because you're going to be slammed with all the humidity is coming out from that. So it does work to a certain extent. And it's also, as far as consumption, it's low voltage, as you may know. So it's not, you don't consume.
But it's the wattage that's important.
The what? Sorry?
It's the wattage that's important.
The wattage. Well, it is. You're right. In a case like yours, are you planning to do anything with the cement slab itself?
Other than leveling cement where required and the proper DITRA membrane that's for a floor without the electric wiring.
Okay. Because, if you were, I would have said go with a water system, right? So you go with a hydroponic system, and that would be probably the most efficient.
I agree. But that is also immensely expensive to put in a boiler or heat pump, air to water or geothermal to water. Yeah.
Stay on the line. We'll get to the answer. We'll answer this question fully. All right, it is time to take more questions for Walter Assey, president of Renovco, 514-790-0800. That is the number to reach us or to text us at. Allison has been waiting quite patiently, and she has a question about plumbing. Allison, take it away.
Hi, I had a quick question about the plumbing stack. Like a lot of people, we got flooded through our toilet. And so we had them come and check, and whoever put that toilet in the basement did not put the backflow valve in. So when they were checking to see and make sure there wasn't a backflow, which there wasn't, they were looking at the plumbing stack, and they said, oh, it's sweating on the top. You should change it. I've never heard in all of my life of anyone having to change the plumbing stack. So I'm a little suspicious about whether we really need to do that. Is that something people regularly do?
Is your plumbing stack made out of cast iron?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So with cast iron comes the issue. You don't necessarily need to change the whole stack, but you could change if the elbow is what's sweating, that could be changed. Or if you see, but there's telltale signs, right? There's sweating, there's a telltale sign. There's, if you see rust, corrosion, there's telltale sign. To answer your question in a simpler format, yes, sometimes you do have to change your plumbing stack, specifically if it was made in cast iron. With time, cast iron was great at the time, but with time, the rust and the corrosion will take its toll. Beside the fact that also the capacity inside the pipes might be compromised with time as well. If you want to know, 100% what needs to be done, First, you do a visual inspection. So you're going to, you know, you yourself look at it and say, okay, is there sweating for real? Number one, do we see any corrosion? Do we see any advanced wear? And then you could decide, okay, am I, you know, changing just the elbow or I'm changing the whole stack? Now, the good news for you is once you are in the elbow, the rest of it, because the way you're going to replace it, you're going to replace it into a PVC pipe and not into another cast iron pipe. So the cost of the material is negligible at this point. It's once you get the plumber there, once he's changed the elbow, might as well you just change the stack all the way down from the bathroom if everything is exposed anyways.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's, you know, the biggest part of it is just to get the plumber there. Once they're there, you're talking another maybe $100 in materials max.
Oh, okay. Because the quote for the backflow valve with changing the stack was, it's up there. I'm not going to lie.
How much was it?
It's like, I want to say $1,100 or $1,300, somewhere in that neighborhood.
I don't think it's the stack that's the cost. It's mostly probably associated with the backflow valve.
Because they have to break the cement to put that in.
That's correct. It's okay. Not up there. It's actually within the range.
It's within the range? Okay, because I said to my husband, I'm suspicious. I've never heard of anyone changing a stack.
No,
like, what is this?
It's within the range and it's reasonable.
All right. Okay. Thank you, Allison.
Thank you so much.
We're going to go back to Steve. Steve, this is my fault. This is my mistake. I went to Allison without us finishing your call. Steve was talking about his electric heated floor. Walter, you want to continue with your answer? He was wondering about the efficiency.
Yeah. So it's 12 watts per square foot per hour. That's pretty much the average.
Okay. Now, is that with the styrofoam or without styrofoam?
So that will be the average that's calculated. And because you don't have the styrofoam, and I don't know what the thickness of the slab is, and I don't know if you have geotextile underneath.
Well, the house is about 60 years old, I would expect the worst conditions.
Yeah, so I would add another 25% efficiency loss. So
I see.
That will give you a good direction where to go from there.
Okay, thank you very much, Walter. You've been a big help.
My pleasure.
Okay, thanks. Steve. Thanks. Thank you so much. Okay, we have a question here. Good morning. Great show as always. Thank you. I wonder if you could answer a question. My house is almost 60 years old and I've had many renovations and I'm sure my ducts are very dirty and probably not optimally working. And I have a little bit of black around the ducts in the basement and the ceiling. What would be the best thing to do? And do you have any recommendations on who to call?
So duct cleaning obviously is what I would recommend. Who to call is a great question. You want not just to call the company, you want to ask about the efficiency of the machines that they're using. Because what it is a suction machine. And some of them have those portable machines. If you have long ducts, these are not good, no good. So you need truck-mounted machines with big efficiency. You need to ask the questions. Because a lot of these guys, when they're busy, they subcontract. Mm. And then they have these guys with minivans that have those small portable machines.
But like, you have to pay for that, even if they're not doing, let's say they come and they're not ready to do the job, you're still paying for that business.
It's not like they're not ready to do the job. They will do the job, but it's like just might as well you stick a vacuum cleaner
okay.
Depending on the length of your duct and the size of the home.
So be sure you know what you're asking for.
Be sure you're asking for and the power of the machine that they're using. I like the truck mounted ones because they do have, you know, a lot of power to them, and they're way more efficient. The idea behind it, if you're just gonna clean to clean, mm-hmm. A lot of it can be done by yourself because most of the dirt is usually at the registers.
Okay.
Right? But if you've had multiple renovations and you have not cleaned your furnace,
it's that time
is
for
a
that
mistake
deep clean.
To begin with, yeah. The company, because to be quite frank with you, they all have the good, the bad, and the ugly in the mm-hmm. sense that I've seen them with the right machines and I've seen them with the wrong machines. When they come with the wrong machine, I send them back.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty much the... So, you know, maybe you should have that conversation right at the source so they don't send you a small guy with a small portable machine.
Okay, we have time for one quick last question here. We live in Beaconsfield and we've had 5 floods of sewage water. Ugh. We've had every type of floor and now we have an epoxy, which seems to be the most waterproof. Is this the case?
It is the case. I mean, it's pretty much cement. That you seal with colors and So, I mean...
But five floods, Walter. What's going on?
Five floods, I mean, there's... Call another plumber. I don't know. Like, something is not right.
Well, something isn't right. Yeah, five floods.
That's a lot of floods. So, I mean, epoxy is probably the way you want to go because it's sealed and it's not porous and you could just wipe it and clean it and disinfect it. You know, either that or porcelain right on cement. But with porcelain, you have to deal with the grout. And the grout have to be sealed, so every so many years. Whereas epoxy, you don't have to touch it anymore. So that would be the problem. But here's the thing. With epoxy, again, there's a whole package of things that come. Number one, you want to make sure that it is, that the floor is leveled and your cement slab is in good condition.
Hope that helps you out, Stephanie, and hopefully that fifth one was the last one. Walter Assey, president of Vernofco, thank you so much for answering all the questions. We'll be back here next week.